This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. North Korea is a communist nation that has a nuclear weapon, and it has rockets that could be capable of striking North America. North Korea is a closed society where videotaping in public is a crime punishable by death, yet still there are some who will brave that punishment. Here's sound from one former official in North Korea who did that.
This is dangerous, and if I get caught, I know I'd immediately be executed as a traitor to the Korean people. But I've got to do this. I've got to do this no matter what. I'm just one person. Even if I have to sacrifice my life, someday something is going to change.
That is a current official in North Korea who is videotaping. And that is punishable by death if caught. Now, in Secret State of North Korea, Frontline, the PBS series, shines a light on the hidden world of the North Korean people, drawing on undercover footage from inside the country, as well as interviews from defectors, including top officials who are working on trying to chisel away at the regime's influence. The program will be broadcast locally on KLRN tomorrow at 9 p.m. And we're joined this half hour by the director of this Frontline report, James Jones. James, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
James, why is it so important that the North Korean regime clamp down on this flow of information?
Well, I think that the way that the North Korean regime has survived for its entire history, despite the kind of abject poverty, the famines in which, more than a million North Koreans died, the way that they've kept control is by keeping their people in the dark and building this information barrier around the country. And it's worked incredibly effectively up until recently. But the problem for the regime is that the progress in technology means that increasingly North Koreans are hearing about the outside world. So whether that's having mobile phones or something that we feature in our film is people smuggling DVDs and thumb drives into the country illegally, which have American movies, South Korean soap operas, entertainment shows. And basically what those media do is open North Koreans' eyes to the outside world. And, even if it's a terrible movie, they'll see the tall buildings, they'll see people driving cars, they'll see people eating meat, and they'll think, wow, we've been lied to. All this propaganda we've been fed our whole lives, that we live in the best country on earth, is a lie. And it has, these kind of tacky shows that are smuggled in there have this incredibly profound effect. And every defector that we met had a story of the first time they saw one of those movies, whether it's Bad Boys or, whatever it may be, Skyfall. So that's basically what the regime is now fighting against. And Kim Jong-un is scared, and he's sending his security forces house to house to search for these DVDs. And in November last year, 80 people were executed for watching foreign television.
So North Korea, a closed society, they have been telling their own people through their propaganda films and television reports that this is the greatest country in the world. But the people are starving. I mean, how can they believe that when they themselves don't have enough to eat?
That's right. I mean, and that's always been confusing as an outsider looking in, thinking, how do they do this? And, they control all the television, they control the newspapers. Everyone is required to go to these weekly meetings to glorify the leader. The propaganda is omnipresent. Our undercover camera people film speakers on street corner blaring out Kim Jong-un's speeches. But I have to say, it's not as effective as it used to be. And so what our undercover footage also shows is that people behind closed doors are starting to question the regime, and they're more cynical because they understand that not everything they're being told is true. And so while I think that it has been pretty effective, for more than 60 years in keeping the North Korean regime going, I think that the regime faces a kind of uphill struggle now to kind of keep that control on people's kind of mindsets.
So in the video, in your documentary on Frontline that will be shown on KLRN Channel 9 here in San Antonio tomorrow at 9 p.m., we see that this facade, this lie about the success of the Korean nation is so important to the regime to remain in power that they are willing to execute people just for watching foreign films because they know that will eat away at the foundation of this facade.
That's right. I mean, as their propaganda becomes less effective, they have to rely more and more on the security apparatus and their kind of willingness to be brutal. You know, Kim Jong-un is someone who a few weeks ago executed his own uncle. You know, they don't have the normal boundaries that, you know, democracies have. They, you know, in North Korea, even making a joke about the supreme leader can end up with you being taken to a political prison camp. You know, we've seen that almost 1 in 100 North Koreans is a political prisoner. You know, those are not prisoners in the normal penal system. These are outside. These are people who perform some political crime. And often those people, it's not just them, the person who commits the crime, but often their whole families will be taken off to these camps. So when you've got a regime that's that brutal, it's very hard to see how people rise up. I mean, there's no question that people are more aware and they're more cynical, but the regime increasingly is just relying on the kind of old-fashioned tactics of brutality.
Now, you don't cover this in your documentary, but this is just the most recent sideshow that we've had with North Korea, and it's dear leader Kim Jong-un and former basketball player Dennis Rodman. So when he shows up in North Korea with his former NBA players and they put on an exhibition game and Rodman sings happy birthday to Kim, is that contributing to propping up this falsehood?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really difficult one, this. I mean, I found it kind of almost impossible to watch Dennis Rodman's trip. It was just so excruciatingly embarrassing. But, I mean, certainly Kim Jong-un tried to make great propaganda out of it. You know, it's the front page of the state newspaper, him with Dennis Rodman. And, you know, but I also think he's a big kid. You know, he went to school in Switzerland when he was a teenager. He was obsessed with the Chicago Bulls. Obsessed with basketball, and he's getting a chance to meet one of his heroes. You know, I'm sure he would have preferred Michael Jordan, but Dennis Rodman's the one who's willing to come. And so it's a kind of completely surreal situation on all sides. And I mean, I personally think that Dennis Rodman is being naive to be generous to him. I think that, you know, going to a totalitarian dictatorship and singing happy birthday to this kind of brutal dictator is just wrong on so many levels. But there are some people who think that any contact with the regime is a good thing. And, you know, for instance, on one of Dennis Rodman's previous trips, he found out that Kim Jong-un had a baby. And, you know, we didn't even know that. We just know so little about this regime.
We're going to continue the conversation. We want to hear from our listeners. What do you think about Rodman's trip? What do you think about U.S. foreign policy to North Korea, a nuclear state? Call in. We want to hear from you. The phone number is 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX, and we will be right back.
Recent satellite imagery analyzed by Amnesty International shows that since Kim Jong-un came to power, the political prison camps have grown.
200,000 civilians that are outside of the criminal penal system. One of the camps, Hwasong, is 540 square kilometers. It's 3 times the size of Washington, D.C.
It's estimated that as many as 1 in 100 North Koreans is a political prisoner, many of whom were caught trying to defect. Still, several thousand North Koreans try to escape through China each year.
And this is The Source on KSTX. You just heard a clip from a documentary from Frontline. It'll be on PBS KLRN tomorrow at 9 p.m. Secret State of North Korea. With me on the line is James Jones. He's the director of this Frontline report. So, James, how can the state maintain so many people in these camps?
Well, I mean, we don't know that much about these camps. You know, very few people actually survive and get out of them alive. You know, once you're there, often you spend the rest of your life there. I mean, they're absolutely enormous. I mean, one of them is three times the size of Washington, D.C. You know, these are not the kind of prisons that we have in mind. These are absolutely huge. And, you know, some children are born there and spend their whole lives there. And I guess it's just become a kind of crucial tool in keeping the regime going. You know, it's the fear of these camps that keeps people in line.
But we see in your documentary, some people are losing that fear of the military uniform. We saw a woman running an illegal taxi service out of the back of a pickup, mouthing off pretty bad to a soldier.
Yeah, I mean, that footage is just incredible. I remember the first time I saw it. And, you know, particularly watching the film tomorrow night, you know, two-thirds of the way through the film, you've just seen all these horrific stories of people being oppressed and screwed over by the regime. And then to see these women kind of standing up to authority. And as you say, this woman, you know, the soldier comes and tries to tell her off, and she literally chases him down the street and kind of hits him and, you know, swears at him. And he looks scared. And you think, you know, even in the States or back in the UK where I'm from, that would be pretty bold. But to do that in North Korea is really extraordinary. And I think you're right. I think it does show that people are more bold. I think, crucially, though, if it were a political question, you know, it's still, you don't get away with anything when it comes to talking about Kim Jong-un or the regime. But when it's a kind of, it's a minor infringement of the law, people are willing to take on authority, which is, you know, for an outsider, that's incredibly encouraging to see, I think.
Okay, let's go to the phones. And our phone number is 614-8980, 614-8980. What do you think about the U.S. foreign policy towards North Korea? Scott has called in. Scott, thanks for calling in. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I normally listen to your show every time you're on. But the initial premise that you came up with there is so ridiculous. That's why I called in.
Okay.
I mean, number one, you know, Dennis Rodman, he's known by Kim, yeah. But since that country is isolated, North Korea, do you think that the North Korean people know who Dennis Rodman is? How the hell would they know who Dennis Rodman is? I mean, that's they don't know who Dennis Rodman is. And I don't, you know, it's kind of ridiculous that he visited and all that kind of stuff. But saying that he keeping them in power, in the case that Dennis Rodman got some power, and come on, he don't have any power. He don't even have any power here in the States. Rather, he sure don't have anything in North Korea.
Okay, Scott, good points. Thanks for calling in and enlightening us in that way. But James, the North Korean propaganda machine puts Rodman on the front page. They're able to say, this guy is a world champion basketball player. He's, you know, played with Jordan and won lots of championships. He's a big deal, and they can make it look like he is somebody.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the caller's right. Probably, you know, North Koreans are not well acquainted with the NBA. I mean, Kim Jong-un is different because he'd lived abroad, so he had access to this stuff. But yeah, you know, the media can present this guy as a huge superstar from America, and he's coming over and he's bowing to Kim Jong-un and he's singing happy birthday and he's, you know, completely subordinating himself to Kim Jong-un. So for a country that really hates America and anti-American propaganda kind of permeates so much of their media, this is a victory for them. I mean, I don't think it's a huge deal that he's doing that. You know, it's not the thing that's going to keep Kim Jong-un in power, but it's playing into the hands of this kind of vicious dictator, which, you know, if Dennis Rodman had better advice, I think he'd probably decide wasn't the best thing to be doing.
Right. But so the United States has sent food to North Korea when they were in the grip of the famine. How was that? Why do they still hate the United States?
Because, I mean, from the Korean War onwards, you know, their posters of kind of American soldiers torturing, you know, North Korean women, you know, math textbooks, you know, not even history textbooks, but math textbooks would say, you know, if 254 evil imperialist Americans are killed by the brave North Korean soldiers on one day, and then 12 more evil American imperialist people were killed the following day. You know, how many American imperialist people have they killed? And so it's everywhere. You know, the indoctrination begins from a very early age, and, you know, it's part of its kind of reason for existence. It's, you know, it was founded effectively after splitting from the South and fighting against the Americans. And so, you know, fear of outsiders is another way of keeping people in line, because, you know, you need your strong leader, Kim Jong-un, who's kind of leading the strong military to fight off the aggressors from outside. And America is the main focus for that.
So the media that they're getting on these thumb drives, which could be like bootlegged TV shows and movies, but they are mainly from South Korea, or are they from the United States?
So they are often from South Korea, because, I mean, that is the most shocking for a North Korean, because these people speak the same language as them. You know, they look like them. They're effectively part of the same country, and yet they're living decades ahead in terms of prosperity and technology. So that, you know, they love South Korean soap operas and all that, but they also, you know, they love American movies and that have Korean subtitles. And I mean, that is the interesting thing. It's like you're fed, on the one hand, all this anti-American propaganda, and yet, you know, you love the latest American movie. And I think certainly the younger North Koreans, it's kind of, I think it's become kind of cool to watch these foreign shows. You know, they're kind of like must-have items, these thumb drives. And so, you know, they're becoming more worldly, and I'm sure lots of them now question the kind of, you know, ridiculous hostility to the South and to America.
Another really interesting item you had in the documentary on Frontline that airs tomorrow at 9 on KLRN was the department store where no one is allowed to buy anything. Can you talk about that some?
Yeah, I mean, this is part of the kind of state propaganda. So there's this, it's called Pyongyang Department Store Number 1, and it's the kind of biggest, grandest shop in North Korea. It's, I mean, in London we have Harrods. You know, it's just like the big, famous, iconic place. The difference with this department store is that when our reporter went in there to try and buy stuff, so he went out, tried to buy beer, tried to buy TV, you know, all, just went around counter after counter, and each time he was told, actually, you know, none of this stuff is for sale, it's just for show. And this department store is used on state TV to show how advanced and how prosperous the economy is. And actually, most of the stuff in the shop is not for sale. It's just, it's, you know, it's a sham. So that's kind of tells you a lot about how the North Korean regime operates and how they try and kind of pull the wool over their people's eyes.
So how does the country afford a nuclear program and even a, what is it, a space program or an advanced rocket program?
I know, it's extraordinary. I mean, they're in this one regard, they're way ahead of South Korea. And it's because they, you know, Kim Jong-un and the people around him don't care whether, you know, the people out in the countryside, the 99%, eat grass for 100 years. You know, it's far more important to them and their survival that they have nuclear weapons, because that's the only thing that they've got going for them. You know, in terms of dealing with the outside world, it's a tiny, impoverished dictatorship, you know, who no one would care, would give a second thought to. But the fact that they have these nuclear weapons and, you know, in theory are not far from being able to hit mainland America, that means that people have to sit up and pay attention to you. Now, do they have any intention of ever using those weapons? Probably not. But it just means that they get a seat at the table, people have to take them seriously. And for years and years, I mean, particularly Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, he was very clever at the way he would use these threats. And, you know, whenever they wanted to negotiate or get a bit more aid, or, you know, he would have some kind of provocation. And Kim Jong-un is kind of trying to work on that same model, but he's not as smart as his father. And frankly, people just think he's unpredictable. So when he last spring started threatening the U.S. mainland, I mean, I don't think the White House thought there was an imminent attack, but they really didn't know how seriously to take this guy, because they just knew so little about him. You know, he could really have a pretty loose grip on reality.
Now, we've seen regimes collapse in our lifetime, you know, the Berlin Wall coming down, the Arab Spring. This seems to be something that happens, you know. What would happen if suddenly the regime would collapse, that the Kim regime would be overtaken by the people?
I mean, if that did happen, it would lead to huge problems, I think. I mean, I'm sure many people would like to see the end of that regime, but there's no easy solution here. I mean, you mentioned the Berlin Wall. I think the difference in income per capita between the East and the West, I think the West was 2.5 times wealthier than the East. With North and South Korea, it's something like 35 times. So, you know, it's not like you can just get rid of the border and unite these two countries. They've moved too far apart now.
But reunification is a dream for many in Korea.
It is a dream for many. But I was actually struck working in South Korea and speaking to young people, and actually they don't want to be reunited. You know, why would they suddenly want their kind of wealth to be slashed and have to deal with all these poor, uneducated people from the north? And it would cause huge social upheaval. And I think the kind of appetite for reunification is diminishing. You know, politicians still have to kind of make the right noises and all the rest of it. But I think people in the south are kind of happy with the way things are going. Their economy is booming. And
they want the threat removed because Korea is still a pretty dangerous neighbor to have, North Korea.
Right, exactly. They would like Kim Jong-un not to be developing nuclear weapons and threatening them. You know, they could do without that worry, although I have to say most of them don't take the threats that seriously. But yeah, it's not going to be a simple solution. And China is a huge factor in all this. And frankly, I think China's getting pretty fed up with Kim Jong-un.
We don't have enough time to talk about China, that's for sure. All right, well, we're out of time. James Jones, he's the director of this Frontline Report, airs tomorrow night on KLRN PBS, 9 p.m., Secret State of North Korea, shining a light on the hidden world of North Korea. Incredible images and stories of people living in a dark regime. You don't want to miss it. Thank you so much for joining us, James.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we're going to be back talking about internet in San Antonio on The Source. Stay tuned.